This is episode 29 of the Well-Rounded Wealth Podcast. Patrick, it is good to see you, my friend. I feel like I haven't talked to you in about over a week, but how are you doing? I heard you just bought a condo. Congrats.
I'm doing well, John. Looking all perky this morning.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I am on the opposite side of that, sleep deprived, but still alive. So that's a new quote.
What is it? Deprived, but still alive.
Deprived, but still alive. There you go. It runs.
I have just gotten to catch up on sleep because the hours for the set, I've been waking up at like 4 a.m., 5 a.m., getting home at like 8 p.m., 8:30 p.m.
Yeah. Very, very, very high level overview of what you've been doing.
Top secret. I can do this without getting me in trouble. I've basically just been doing background on a set, and they're shooting a movie, and it just requires a lot of time from the background. So it's 3 weeks long. We just finished the first week. But it's been really, really cool. The set's fantastic. Really, really cool to be a part of, and just all the hard work. This is like, it's an actual set instead of just like being on location or anything like that. So just seeing all the hard work that like the set decorators put in and stuff, and just like understanding how like a big machine for a movie, for like a bigger budget movie than the stuff I've been doing works, has been really cool. And just how they handle having 200 plus background people every day. And I'm trying to kind of understanding like the hard work that it is for the people that are in charge of us, taking care of us, has been really interesting. And just the opportunity to like talk to people, make friends, establish some connections. That happened quick. So the first day was like kind of weird because you don't know anybody. But then when I started to get to know people, it starts to like, you go in and then you just immediately see faces you recognize and like. So then it makes it kind of fun. It's almost like a really hard summer camp. You know, that's kind of how I look at it. It's like a 12 to 14 hour day summer camp.
That doesn't sound too bad. It's a good old, did you ever do Camp Thunderbird?
I did Camp Harrison, but I've been to Camp Thunderbird for like school stuff. You've been to Camp Harrison. We've been together.
Is that the one up in the mountains?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I remember that. That one was always funny. It was just like, all right, good luck to the camp counselors trying to control all these adolescent kids that are going through puberty and don't want to listen to anyone.
Well, that's how I've like kind of looked at the PAs that are in charge of background. Also, when I say background, that means like extras on a movie set for anyone that doesn't know the lingo. Like the people who are like walking behind the camera.
He's beautiful.
But basically, like the PAs, I kind of look at as camp counselors, but like that's the kind of stress they have because they're just like in charge of all these people. And there's a lot of them that like they just don't fully get it, not fully with it. And they just ask a lot of questions that don't matter at all in the grand scheme of things. And the PAs kind of like have to like answer them, but they have so much on their plate and I could tell they're stressed. So yeah, it's an interesting dynamic.
Is that something you'd still want to do one day? Cause I know that's kind of like what your plan was originally going into school.
Yeah. You know, on a set like this, I was like thinking about it. I was like, I do think I'd be pretty good at it. Like, I know I'd be on top of my shit, and like, there are some really good PAs on set, and like, I wouldn't say there's any like bad ones, but there are some that are like lower energy than others, or kind of like not as into it as others. But, like the ones that are into it, I'm like, yeah, that's the person I would like want to be like. So I don't know, maybe. I mean, I'll try to get to know them better and kind of. I started talking to one PA who was like in the group with us, like kind of cueing us when to walk and stuff like that. And I was like kind of talking to her, just like how she likes it and stuff like that. She didn't give me too much. But it was interesting to kind of like learn about how she started doing PA work on a set and stuff like that. But yeah, it does seem pretty hard. They're always moving. They're always doing something. Like they have it harder than us for sure. Way harder because they've always got something going on. Everyone on a set has a walkie talkie. Like that's if you're a crew on a set, no matter what position you are, you have a walkie talkie. So they always have people in their ears, like someone needs to do this, someone's got to do that. So they've always got something to do, and they're always being told something. It's like, there's never, yeah, no, it's intense and it's long hour. Like I said, like not all the PAs are there before we are, but like some of them are. And like, I had a call time for 5:30 AM one morning, which means they were there by 5:00. Set got out at like 7:30, 8:00 PM. So like, Jesus. It's a big day. How so yeah, you're, like it's all you're PA doing. Make? I think it's 250 a day.
250 a day.
Yeah. Then if it goes longer than 12 hours, 12 and a half hours, cause they lunch doesn't count the 30 minute lunch. You get overtime pay, which is like whatever the hourly is times two for overtime pay.
Got it. So like, is a PA a salary position or is it like a,
no.
Are you part of the union?
It's, you can eventually join the union after a certain amount of hours you've worked. But it's really just contract work.
Damn.
That all of them are doing. So yeah, that's it. Wild. Then you get your day rate. If the set were to get out early, which like sometimes that does happen, you still get the full day rate. So like you never will get paid less than what your day rate is. But if it goes longer, then you will get paid more than what your day rate is.
Got it. Okay.
Like that happened for us a couple times this week. I was kind of happy about it because I was like, we've already been here 12 hours. I wouldn't mind staying for 1 or 2 hours more and get more money. Or we're here.
I mean, why not?
Yeah, it
doesn't
exactly.
hurt.
Sorry, Ben. Yeah, for real.
But
yeah, it's been really cool. And there's 2 more weeks to go. So honestly, we're just getting started.
Get more to learn.
More to learn.
All right.
Yeah, but
about?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
No, you're good. This kind of leads into what we're talking about. You and I were kind of talking about kind of what exactly it is that fuels us to like work hard and to like kind of get after it, and like what those reasons are, kind of what fuels our motivations. We've definitely discussed this to a degree, especially with the intrinsic and extrinsic motivations. We did that episode a while ago. I was kind of thinking about it throughout this week on the set, because doing background and when you're lobbed together with a group of 200 people, it is so easy to just chill and do as little work as possible. Cause they can't control that many people. On the flip end of that, it's hard to stand out when you're in a group of that many people. So I've definitely been trying to like think about how do I stand out, but not in an annoying, unprofessional way. Because I've seen some background people that like are doing it to try to like get on camera or like try to get attention. But I'm kind of like, okay, how do I stand out in a way where they're like, oh, like he's with it. He wants to be useful. He wants to be helpful and like help in any way he can. So like kind of trying to find that balance. And as far as what fuels that, I actually was listening. Arnold Schwarzenegger he came out with a book and has been doing a lot of press for the book. And he was a big thing that he was saying is like one of his biggest rules is be useful. Like whatever you're doing, be useful in whatever environment you're in. And then he made a big point. He said he got this advice from his dad, and his dad was telling, he's like, how do you think like, you know, countries have been built and societies have formed. You think it was people who were just sitting around and not doing anything and not being useful or just hanging out, watching TV all day? Or was it people who were, you know, working hard and trying to do things that were useful? So he's like, that's how successful people have been successful and have helped the people around them, is just by being useful. So I kind of had that thought of that advice going in. One thing I've kind of like have been learning is that it's also almost helpful to not be useful when you're in the position that I'm in. Like there was one time where like the PAs were like picking up a bunch of like trash off the set and stuff. And I like went up, I was like, hey, do you guys need any help? And like, they were kind of like, no, 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 you're good. You're good. Like, no, no, go ahead and go back to holding, because they don't want their bosses to see that one of these background actors is doing what's supposed to be their job.
Got it.
You know what I mean? Me being useful and helpful makes the people who are supposed to be being useful and helpful kind of look bad.
That's always an interesting, that is one of the most interesting dynamics in a workplace. When like someone who's a lower level might be more competent or might be able to help. Like, so I'll give you two examples. One is my roommate he's come back and been like, the people I'm working with are less competent. Like he has a degree from the University of Richmond in business management and finance. Like he works at a construction company. Like these guys are construction guys. So he's just what he has studied has helped him be more efficient in doing computer work, essentially. So he's always come back. He's like, the guy above me, it takes him twice as long to do his job that I could do it in. And like I do it in a better way. That's what basically both of their bosses want. So I'm like, just do it. Two options is one, you just go ahead and do it. And you tell the guy who's above you is like, hey, look, I want to make both of us look better by doing it this way and doing it faster. Or you just present your work to the guy above you and say, hey, myself and his immediate guy above him came up with this idea. So that way you're not bashing the guy immediately above you, but you're also like bringing him along. But at the end of the day, the two levels ahead boss knows that, oh, Jack or whoever the person was brought this idea to me. So like I can see him being useful.
Yeah, that's the complication of it though, right? Because whoever is directly above him is not going to like someone below him being more competent than he is, because that develops an insecurity. And that's where the power dynamics and politics of a workplace come into play. Yep. It's like it's going to get a little dangerous if you're starting to outshine a superior, because no one likes that, no matter who you are. I mean, I wouldn't love that. There's definitely like a way to handle it. I think maybe the smart way, if that actually does happen, where if I realize, like if I was in a situation where like someone below me was more competent than me, I think the best course of action is realize that this person has some knowledge that I could gain. So maybe take what he has to say, learn that, understand that, and then you kind of got to do the work on your own. You know, you got to get a little competitive. It's like, okay, this person's a little more competent than me. Now I kind of got to pull some weight here and do my own research and kind of be better than them. You know what I mean? That's kind of how it goes.
Well, here's the converse with that. And obviously it's situational, but like I was in a situation where I had someone who was above me that I was more competent with in certain things. If I was in his position, I would have delegated that work. Like, hey, I know this used to be part of my assignment. Can you be the one taking responsibility for this? And we'll kind of wrap it into more your role and I'll oversee it with you. The difficult part with that is if it's your main role. So like if Jack and I are both supposed to be doing sales, and Jack is above me, but I'm better at sales than Jack, then it gets a little tough. Like you can't delegate your main job.
Right. Yeah.
But I'm of the belief that you either get to the point where you know that your superior, where you know that you are better than your superior and he knows that, or she knows that, and you let whoever the next person is know that. And you either come up with a plan to, I guess, adjust your compensation around it, or you kind of have to leave, because that dynamic will, it like the 48 laws of power, that dynamic will never work, where it, unless you're just being coy and a little secretive. So
yeah, God, that's really interesting. And like at a much lower level of this, where I've experienced this, is that I was working at a restaurant and I was just food running, and the guy who trained me, really, really nice guy, and I love him to death. And I'll say this, at carrying plates, he is better at me than that. Right. He can carry four plates, four full plates of hot just got made food, mm-hmm. and I can't do that. I had just recently like been able to do three at once. I started off only just doing one at each hand because I like didn't want to. I was like, it'd be better to just do this for now than like try to be a hero and carry three at once and drop the food, because that'd be a way worse situation. But where I was more competent than him, one, I guess, an overall education, but also kind of my rapport with the customers. Because when he drops off the food, he doesn't really say anything. He kind of just drops it off and leaves. Or does, it's a Italian restaurant, boys. So he can do the part. But yeah, like, but when I went over, I was personable and was like, hey, like this is the dish. Here you go. If they want any Parmesan cheese, awesome. Hope you guys enjoy your meal. Like enjoy. And then sometimes I would even have like tiny little conversations with them if they open that up. So I noticed that because I did that, it looked like I was more competent at my job and better at my job. Hmm. Does that make sense?
Yep. Yeah. I mean, you're naturally a very good people person too. So
thank you.
Like, it just comes off where it's like, hey, you eat now.
Yeah. Now you eat your food. But yeah, that was just, it was really interesting for me to think about that. Cause, and one, I don't want to overstep on this guy who's, he's great. He's been super nice to me. Like, cause hey, he had trained me really well. And he got me a lot better at, you know, not that it's a crazy complex job, but like running food, he got me a lot better really quickly. And just kind of like showing me a system and stuff. And, but then there's also that dynamic. I'm like, I'm not sure if I want to start like overdoing it, overshadowing him. And I've also like, what makes me look better is my communication with the staff, like especially the other servers. Like I'll communicate with them all the time, ask them like what their seat number order is. Like I could just give the food to the proper people, helping them where I can, like taking food like from them, taking plates from them and running it to the back. So they all think that I'm killing it. Not like killing it, but they're like, oh, like he's on top of it. He's really good. Even though the guy who trained me, he's definitely better than me, but it gives that perception that I'm really good and I'm really with it. And one, because I'm taking time off of their hands. If you're ever taking time off of someone's hands, people are appreciative of that.
It's the most valuable resource, man. Definitely helps. I'll look at that lens from like if I'm the manager's position too. If I see that, I'm gonna reward the person who's working harder or can do work more efficiently. And it's not that I don't like the person, it's just like you kind of have to dissociate the person from the work. It's like you as the individual is not the problem. It is the fact that this work needs to be done. And person X is better than person Y at getting it done. Like,
yeah,
that's the simple facet of it. And we have to, and you know, that is the book, From Strength to Strength. That's a really good example of this, and this concept of moving from your fluid to crystallized intelligence curve. And the premise of it is as people age and they get older within a specific role in a company, they obviously technology and the speed at which the industry changes outpaces their ability to learn, right? So
I see.
That's why you see a lot of 50 plus people, they move into management positions. And it's not that it's a bad thing that they're not in the nitty gritty. It's the one thing that doesn't change is people. So they've had decades worth of experience with people and not necessarily what the people are working on. So they move to managing the people and giving advice around those sorts of things, as opposed to giving advice on, hey, in this certain Excel model or this certain software, Salesforce, do this, XYZ.
Yeah, that's really interesting to think about, because management, it's its own thing completely. But also, I heard this recently. What are your thoughts on companies bringing managers over to them because they have been managers in a completely different industry before?
You're saying they bring managers over from a different industry?
Yeah, because like, oh, well, they have experience being a manager, so let's hire this person as a manager. And but like, they're managing like something that has nothing to do with their skill sets.
Like a CEO that might be in a certain. That happens a lot with CEOs, right?
Yeah, like well, and not even necessarily that high, but it could be.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it depends on what scale of manager you're talking. If you're talking super high level, as in trajectory of a business or some type of organization, I think that's mm-hmm. fine to move it from industry to industry because
okay,
or from role to role because it's again at the end of the day you have your certain pillars. I'll just take business for example because I know it well. Like you have your marketing, your division, your sales division, your product division, your customer relations division, all those kind of things. If you take someone who knows how to manage the overarching team of each of those to drive the company forward, that skill I think is transferable from industry to industry. Because at the end of the day, what you need is you need to make sure your people are happy, make sure your customers are happy, and then provide a good or service for more than you spend to provide it. And just
understood.
Make sure that's transparent to everyone within the organization. Now, if you're breaking it down on a more micro level and looking at, hey, let's just look specifically at a finance manager. I don't want to take someone who's done a marketing management before and put them in a finance manager role. That uh-huh. I would look for more specifics as in, okay, I know you have worked on the finance team before. You have managed people underneath you on the finance team before. And you have driven the results I want to get out of you before. So I will put you in this role.
That makes sense.
And that's kind of how I think about it.
Yeah. Well, then there's also that respect level. Because if you bring in a manager from like the outside, there will be that interesting dynamic of when that manager first arrives of you don't know what we're doing. We know more about what we're doing than you know about what we're doing. So it's annoying that we have to report to you. You have experience being a manager, but you don't have experience and you don't have any marketing experience. You've never done marketing before. So that's got to be an interesting task to navigate to make that new manager kind of gain that respect and establish that.
Yeah, it's certainly a level of competence, but also, again, working with people. Because if you take that exact situation, someone who hasn't done marketing and gets put in a marketing manager situation, they would be very naive to go in there and say, marketing team, I know more than you about marketing, and this is the way we're going to do it.
Right.
Like if I were in that role, all I would be asking is questions. Like I would not say anything for the first probably 2 weeks to a month. I would just be like, how do you do things? What things do you think are stupid that we could improve? Like use the people who are in the weeds on these certain things. Because one, that will empower them. It's like, hey, we used your idea. Like, great. And then two, it's you get up to speed on what is happening along with being able to implement change based on recommendations from people below you.
Yeah, that's great. So I definitely see that working.
So like even taking it on the micro level at the restaurant, it's like, hey, I'm just going to call this guy Mario, who's the guy that, you know, you help run food for or who's not as good talking to the customers. It's like, hey, man, I know you've been here for a while. Like I've seen you have a lot of experience. What are some things that you think would either help us sell more or sell higher ticket tables or like get us bigger tips? And it's like, if he were to give you a suggestion, it's like, oh, that's a good idea. Like maybe we'll try it. Now, obviously, if it's stupid, then I'd be like, yeah, I don't know about that, chief.
That's, oh, cool. Thank you for sharing. That's yeah. it. Then you move on.
Yep. Or you just tell them no. Create beef.
Yeah. So what for you in those type of situations, what is your fuel that drives you in that environment? Is it competition? or is it kind of something else for you to want to excel?
Just overarching or?
Yeah. Yeah.
Two things that drive me are, one, I never want to get to a situation where like I feel like I could have done more.
Mm-hmm.
Because from the outside perspective, people can always look like, oh, wow, he does so much. But at the end of the day, you know how much you are capable of doing. So I don't want to have to look back and be like, damn, I could have done better on that. And I'll define better as, or I'll define like doing my best work as feeling confident in the product that I've created or the service I've created. Like going to the point where I know that I don't have anything left I could have changed in this. And before presenting it or before showing it to anything, like I'm proud of what I have accomplished. So that's one portion of it. And then I'm still working through this, but it's like, for some reason, I feel like this pressure of, I want to be able to show, like, I want to be able to show that doing something that's out of the norm is possible. And the steps that you have to take there, they're not, the steps themselves aren't hard, but it's the framework and the mindset behind the pursuit that is the most challenging thing. And that's why we talk about this mm-hmm. so much, is like frameworks and how we're thinking through certain things on this podcast, because there will never be one way to accomplish one certain way to accomplish something. Like, you can achieve a goal in a million different ways. However, the framework at which you approach it, you always have to, there is always a decision-making process that you have to go through in order to take the first step, the next step, and then every step in between the start and the finish. So it's like, is that framework? What is that best framework of decision-making process? Like, what are the principles? What are the values? And what are the kind of decision trees that get you there and that can set you up as an individual to make the best decision possible?
Okay, so I get that. I'm with you. I want to go back to something you said. Okay. You said, I want to prove that doing things out of the norm are possible. Why do you want to prove that?
That I don't know. I don't know. See, that's the wrong word too. Because obviously things that I'm trying to achieve have been done before.
Mm-hmm. But I get what you're saying just from knowing you. Like, yeah, not like possible, impossible, but definitely taking a path less traveled is something that you want to do. But I guess my question is, like, why do you want to do that? Or like, why do you want to prove that that works to kind of take a different approach to your life and do it in a kind of not stereotypical fashion that most of us at our age are going at life right now?
Yeah. That's actually a great question, because I think that helps me frame what this answer is going to be. And yeah, it's being able to have agency and conviction in the path you take in life. So like, yes, my goal is probably more like business and monetary focused, and doing it in a certain way that builds relationships and inspires others. But that same, when you say prove, that can mean something very different to someone else. But at the end of the day, I just hope whatever that decision is for the other person, they're doing it within their own, they're making their conscious decisions and not relying on what society or peers or anyone else tells them. Which that's kind of how this whole podcast started, is get off autopilot. Like, live the life you want to live, and despite how others react to it.
Do you think that some people just want to live on autopilot?
I don't think anyone wants to live on autopilot. I think people choose to live on autopilot because they're afraid. Two things. One, they're so accustomed to comfort within the realm of being on autopilot that they don't want to change, and two, if they take the step to change, they fear that it will regress down to them dying, which at the end of the day, that's what fear breaks down to. Is just take the job, for example. Like, if I switch jobs or I go out on my own, I could fail or I could get fired. If I get fired, I could be homeless. If I'm homeless, I could be starving and then I'll die.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely have that fear. I don't, maybe subconsciously I take it that far to survival instinct and like I could die, but it's more just the idea of the stress that comes with being in a place like that. That is kind of my, I guess, fear. I mean, I guess it does dig down to the basics, you know. For me, it's the end game of that. It doesn't go all the way to like becoming homeless and dying. It kind of, my brain stops at not being able to pay my bills and what the repercussions of that would be, which I guess could lead to what you're saying.
Yeah.
But maybe that's just my brain, like, not, yeah, it's probably extremely subconscious. My consciousness stops at not being able to pay bills and what's like, and I guess it, I don't even want to think about what would happen if I ever got to that situation, but like, that's kind of the red line. I'm like, I know I can't cross. Like if I'm getting to that place, I'm in serious trouble. But then I don't think about what goes on after that. I'm just kind of like, never get to that point because a lot of more problems will pop up.
Yeah. And look, I'm not saying either choice is bad or you shouldn't do, or you should do something. It is, I want to make sure people are choosing what decision that is. So I kind of look at it on a curve, right? The path I'm going down, it might have more stress in the beginning, right? So I might take a little more of a trough in the beginning stages of my life. But as I continue to build and as I continue to see signs of success and whatever I'm trying to achieve, my curve, I wish I could like connect my iPad or something like that so I could draw it, but my curve of what I'll put on like success or being proud of the usefulness or productivity that I've produced continues to go up later in life. Whereas I think if you choose the more stable path, which again, nothing wrong with it, is your stress level compared to like your perceived level of usefulness or productivity is going to stay a lot flatter, right? So I'll take someone who's in the corporate job. You're going to have less stress because you know you're going to have corporate backing. Like you're going to have your health plan. You're going to have your 401k. You're going to have all that. Like you don't have to worry about, oh crap, am I going to make payroll this week? Everyone has that idea in the back of their head. It's like, oh, what if I were able to create something? Or what if I did something differently? You know, everyone has that thought. And it depends on how you weight whatever that is. And what I mean by that is like, if I weight my usefulness or level of productivity higher than say being a great dad, then I think that you'll have a bigger discrepancy later in life on how proud of you are of that decision. But if your whole goal in life was just, I just want to be a great dad, so I'm going to do everything I can to have the most stable relationship, career I possibly can so that I can devote as much time as I want to my kids, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does make sense.
I'll draw it on this.
I almost just think, I think if I'm getting into that mindset that you just shared a little bit too much, I almost stop living in the moment a little bit. It's just very down the line thinking for me.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's no one is ever going to just think about the future 24/7. I think that's incredibly unreasonable. But you should have checkpoints along your journey, right? Like, we've talked about this. Be present as much as you can in your day-to-day life. However, if you're someone who wants to achieve something and like shoot for something that you don't currently have, you need to have constant check-ins to say, am I on am I still on the right path? Or is this path even the path I want to be on? Because otherwise, that is one thing. It's not wrong with presence, but that's where presence will... Presence doesn't guide you. Presence lets mm-hmm. you receive what is going on in your environment, but it won't point you. I don't think it necessarily points you in the direction based on a conscious decision of where you want to go.
Go ahead. I think when you are being present, that is where opportunities open up the most, though. I can elaborate on that. You know, if you're, especially when communicating with other people, if you are very present in the moment and you're not thinking about what can I gain out of interactions down the line and things like that, and you're kind of just being there, I think that's where connections form. That's where opportunities develop the most. I had a moment. There was a background woman. She's much older. She's a mother and has kids close to my age. I wasn't even thinking about, you know, any opportunities, any career advantages. I was just talking and things like that, and just kind of, you know, being a little social. And then I could tell that she was really hot and sweaty. So I went up to the PA and I was like, hey, I think she could maybe use some water or something. She might need a breather. And then she asked if I said something, and I was like, I might've. And she was really grateful because she didn't want to say anything, but she was suffering. And then all of a sudden she's like, hey, let me get your contact info. If you're interested in acting, I know this group of people who, like, they do these, research stuff that's like for chiropractors and training, and they have like training modules and case studies, and they hire actors, to do this, and it pays really, really well. So all of a sudden an opportunity popped up just because I was just being present and just trying to get to know people. And I think that's been really powerful for me. Sometimes I'm really bad at it. I had to get told to, like, hey, be in the moment a little more, to, like, be present in your interactions. Even don't always be thinking about, oh, what do I need to be doing? How can I level up my career, my repertoire? How do I keep pushing and pushing and fighting and fighting? And so also, actually, let's also just be in the moment with people, whether it's people we know and love or people we're meeting, and then things happen.
Yeah. And I think I'll break that, because I agree to an extent, but I think I'll break it down. I think being present opens you up to connection.
Uh-huh.
And I think the connections is what can lead to opportunity. Because, like, I could connect with that same person, but if she asked me if I want to do the chiropractor or acting thing, I'd probably say no.
Yeah.
Just because that's not the direction I want to go in. So, like, right. You need, it's not one or the other. It's a dichotomy that you have to manage, right? And I would say that presence, if you're looking at it over, like, the span of a lifetime, or even just take the span of a month, right? I would say maybe 4 days out of the month, you're looking into the future. The other 27 of it or 26 of it, you're in the present, like, focusing on connecting with people or connecting with the task at hand.
Yeah. It's true. If you're always present and never planning ahead, never focusing on, like, long-term goals, things aren't exactly going to work out. And I have seen that issue with people and some friends where they're too present, you know, I think there might be such a thing as living in the moment a little too much. Unless you're extremely comfortable with where you are and it's exactly where you want to be, then I guess, sure, always live in the moment. But I mean, just for things in general, planning is required just for life, not even for huge career aspirations. But, you know, you gotta plan doctor appointments and, you know, dentist appointments. I need to do that soon. That's why I brought that up, that example. Because I haven't been to an Atlanta doctor yet, and I need to start doing that. So that's something I need to plan for. I can't just always be in the moment and just be like, yeah, my teeth will just work out. So,
you know, by the doctor's office and stop in. Yeah. And
yeah. Oh, I was, hey guys, I was just living in the moment. and I thought I could come in for an appointment.
My teeth were
what's
calling,
going on,
man. They were shut.
I take that back. Actually, I've been to the eye doctor down here. So take that, whoever needs to take that. Yeah. Take that, universe. Yeah. I did something right. I needed new contacts. Go ahead.
There you go. He's got it. He's got his life figured out. Again, it depends on where, if you want to go somewhere, you need to plan. But
yeah,
take the Buddhist monk. Like their whole entire focus is being present. So it just depends, you know.
Sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
What's so interesting about that is I don't know their exact, you know, doctrine of what they actually believe, but I think they take that isolationist method because they believe that our whole society is not how we should be living, period. And that the isolationist lifestyle is actually the key, because you should just always be present and we shouldn't always be like on this competitive grind or this climb. They think they should just be in the moment. They have an entirely different philosophy on how to live. Like, it would be really interesting to actually talk to one of them and hear their juxtaposition to what we're saying, because they think it's all a bunch of bullshit.
Well, actually, no. So like when I went to Thailand and met with the monk and stuff like that.
Cool. Okay.
So that is one thing I enjoyed about Buddhism, because Buddhism is not, in its principle, it's not a religion. It's a way of life. Their whole thing is you should explore and find out for yourself. So
okay,
for the monks, like, and for Buddha, his way of life and what he felt more at peace with was removing himself from materialism. That doesn't necessarily have to be your way of life if it's not something that you believe in. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, they have also, there's certain science and data behind certain ways of life that back certain things, but again, it doesn't necessarily, it's not a should. It's a you can, based on the frameworks you approach your decision making from. And that's where I think that's where I resonated with Buddhism. It's because they tell you to go investigate whatever someone is telling you before you adopt that belief or way of life or whatever it is. So if someone is trying to convert me to Catholicism or to be a Presbyterian, Baptist, whatever it is, I don't know, religions down there like that, but I should go and study their principles instead of taking their word at face value.
I like that. I'd be interested to see what would happen if, you know, someone took that Buddhist monk onto a yacht with like a jacuzzi and see if he still hates materialism.
Have you seen those what are they? Nelk? Yeah. Or did it full? Yeah, Nelk. Have you seen those, their videos where they take a Mormon guy and they bring him to Miami at strip club?
No, that sounds hilarious.
Oh my God. This guy's got like the mutton chops in his like farmer's hat, no phone or anything like that. He's not supposed to drink, but he does. It's like it literally is real time. It looks like his brain is just overwiring. It's like, oh my God, there's so much else out here. Instead of
that's sheep. Wild.
Farming and
so did he love it? Was he like, this is awesome, or was he kind of uncomfortable with all that quick exposure?
Because that goes directly against their way of life. It's like, don't drink, monogamy, it's like eat off the land, work from sunrise to sunset.
Wait, who's the which one is like has polygamy as a way of life? Was that an early form of Mormonism? Is that how you say that?
I don't know.
I know polygamy was a thing in some sort of like Western state in like, I don't know, 1800s. I thought maybe the origins of Mormonism. I really hope Mormonism is the correct word for that, but
Mormonism
that doesn't sound right coming off the tongue, but I don't know what else you would call it.
No, Mormons are not polygamous.
Were they ever?
I don't know. As early as 1890, practice of polygamy came to an end. Oh, maybe it was. Maybe way back.
Yeah, I think in its origins it was, and then I'm guessing that stopped.
Well, I think a lot of religions are like that. Like back in the day. I mean, even...
Yeah, wonder why. So the thought leaders in charge of that religion were like, actually, I should have a ton of wives. I think I should actually be married to as many women as possible. And it's all because of glory to God. You guys just got to trust me on this one.
I love
that. Actually, yeah. You're married to this woman? I don't think God wants that. I'll be right back. You come with me, wife.
Good Lord. Alrighty, and with that.
I'm just saying, like, if...
Oh, I know, I have three.
Our brains are not that different. I mean, you know, we have our set of values, but, like, at its core, I understand how guys think if we have similar ways of thinking. I'm like, oh, this guy has a ton of power and is known as like a thought leader and has a connection with God. Oh, and all of a sudden he's telling people that, you know, God was telling him that he should be married to all the women. We know exactly what he's doing. We know what's going on there. Get out of here. Oh, yeah. I'm sure God really, really told you that. I'm sure there was no biological inclination that overtook your supposed connection you had.
Yeah. And God in that instance is his genitals.
Yeah.
No longer thinking with his heart and his head. He's thinking with his horniness.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That man was, what's Thomas's phrase? Strategically horny.
Strategically horny. That's one of the best strategies I've ever heard. Using divine intervention. So morally wrong, but
I don't know.
Undoubtedly clever. All right, do you have to get going, Pat?
Yeah, I do have to wrap up. But that was a great way to wrap it up. And remember, wrap it up.
Always. Yep. Be safe out there.
Yeah, stay safe, guys.
Yeah, stay safe. And yeah, I guess if you get anything out of that.
Yeah, if you don't like and subscribe on YouTube or our Instagram, you're not going to be staying safe out there.
Yeah, that's the correlation right there. And speaking of liking and subscribing, thank you guys so much for listening. As always, hope y'all enjoyed this one. I kind of pick at Patrick's brain a little bit today, and I usually don't get to do that, so that was very fun. And yeah, whatever you're listening from, feel free, if you haven't already, to give it a like, give it a follow, give a 5-star rating. We're always super, super appreciative of that. And yeah, and feel free to reach out on social media, through our Instagram, through TikTok, through whatever. If you want to reach out to us about any topics you want to hear about, if you want to challenge us on any points that we brought up, we always love to hear from you. And thank you guys so much, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Peace.